Welcome to the latest episode of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, November 8th. This week, we're looking at an article from the October issue of the journal Oncology, and it's titled Germline Testing in Prostate Cancer, When and Who to Test. I spoke with one of the authors of this review, Alexandra Sokolova, an assistant professor at Oregon Health and Science University. Dr. Sokolova detailed the article, which summarizes germline testing recommendations for prostate cancer, specifically looking at the recently updated NCCN guidelines for prostate cancer, as well as describing care models for providing counsel and testing. Dr. Sokolova, thank you so much for taking some time and joining me on the podcast to talk about your work for the journal Oncology. I really just wanted to start, if we could, with a brief background about specifically germline testing for prostate cancer. You know, what role does it play for treating patients? What role does it play really in this work? And how does it compare to other genetic testing options?
So I'll start with implications. First of all, germline testing can have a prognostic implications. There's data by Castro et al. That men with germline BRCA1 mutations are diagnosed with more aggressive disease. So they more often have lymph node involvement. They more often have metastasis at the time of diagnosis. They are diagnosed at a younger age. And being a germline BRCA1 or 2 mutation carrier is also associated with a worse outcomes. For example, survival is decreased in germline BRCA1 take carriers compared to non-carriers. In study by Castro et al., it was 8 years versus 13 years. So the first implication of germline testing is prognostic. The second implication for patients with prostate cancer is treatment implications. There is now 2 PARP inhibitors, rucaparib and olaparib, that are approved for men with metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer who carry DNA repair mutations. And that includes both somatic or germline mutations. Rucaparib is approved for only BRCA1 and BRCA2 carriers, when olaparib has a longer list of mutations that would make patients eligible. There's also data suggesting that men who carry DNA damage repair mutations are more sensitive to platinum chemotherapy. So men who undergo germline testing could potentially discover their eligibility for PARP inhibitors or platinum chemotherapy. Another aspect that's equally important for patients or their families is that can germline testing can inform the risk, the family risk of cancers. So if patient is found to have a germline mutation, there's a 50-50 chance that their biological children or their full siblings carry the same germline mutation. So if patient is found to have a mutation, we ask their first degree family members to get tested as well. And if we find mutations in them, then we can implement early cancer screening or risk-reducing procedures. For example, for female carriers of BRCA1 or 2 mutations, salpingophrectomies could be life-saving. Bilateral prophylactic mastectomies can be discussed. And there is depends on a family history, depends on a particular mutation that's carried. But I think it's very important for family members to know and to identify those families that have those germline mutations so we can prevent cancer in those families.
Perfect. And so could you talk to me a bit about the article that you and your colleague, Dr. Heather Chang, wrote? You know, what did you really focus on and what did you hope to accomplish with this piece?
The article was an overview of germline testing for men with prostate cancer, and we focused on discussing who needs to be tested and what is the best way to do that. The NCCN guidelines, National Cancer Care guidelines, now recommend that we do test a pretty large subgroup of men with prostate cancer for germline mutations. They recommend testing men with high risk and very high risk disease. They recommend testing men with all men with metastatic prostate cancer and men who meet certain family history criteria. But these recommendations are relatively new. I think 2019 was the first year where they actually put it as a recommendation. And we currently don't have a set infrastructure or model to provide that. It's a large patient population that needs this testing. And we don't have enough genetic counselors to provide that. So our article is really a twofold, focusing on who needs to be tested. And the second fold, looking at different models to provide testing and looking into hybrid models, how our medical oncologists can play a more active role in providing the germline testing.
Right. And I think this question would kind of go a little bit towards the latter part of that twofold kind of focus. And really, it's how does the increased incorporation of germline testing for prostate cancer impact the delivery care models that are in place now for patients?
So I think there is issues with the band of what genetic counselors can provide. The typical model for genetic counseling or germline testing is first patients have a pre-test counseling session with genetic counselors where they discuss potential outcomes that they can have a pathogenic, likely pathogenic variant of unknown significance, or they can have pathogenic, likely pathogenic OVS results found. They discuss about implications, they discuss potential discrimination, they discuss gene law that protects against genetic discrimination. And after that, genetic counselor usually orders the germline test, which is saliva or blood test. And once the results are back, they have a post-test counseling to discuss the results and implications. So each patient usually requires, it's often a 1 hour for pre-test, and post-test is 30 minutes to 1 hour, depending on the results. And with increase of implications for germline testing, not only in prostate cancer, but it's now recommended for all pancreatic patients, for all patients with triple negative metastatic breast cancer, it's kind of now expanding. There is just not enough genetic counselors to provide those services. And so the field is looking into different models, and there is a lot of different models being tested right now. One of them is, can medical oncologists provide pre-test counseling, order the test, and only refer patients who need discussion about broader implication of germline testing or have positive results to genetic counselors? Can we provide a web-based models where patients can put their information on, get their tests sent to their home, and then discuss the results with genetic counselor over the phone if needed? So different models are currently being looked into to see what is the best way to provide germline testing for such a large patient population.
Sure. And so to kind of take a step back to the first part of that kind of idea for your paper, which is the patient that it would focus on, could you, and I think you touched on this a little bit in your first response, but could you kind of talk about exactly what patient would really fit germline testing and really in regard to this idea that you write about that's heritable risks for patients with prostate cancer?
So when we talk about who needs to get tested, I think the NCCN guidelines mention that all men with high risk and very high risk prostate cancer should get tested. And that's because we think that this patient population is enriched with germline mutations, and they do have a higher risk of progressing to metastatic disease in the future. So we do recommend them to get tested. It doesn't necessarily change what we do for them at that time. So their treatment options wouldn't necessarily change at the time when they have a high-risk localized disease, other than us knowing that they probably have a more aggressive disease. They could qualify for some clinical trials that use platinum PARP inhibitors. And now with trials moving into earlier spaces, there might be trials available for them in earlier stages as well. The second group of people is all men with metastatic prostate cancer. And we have discussed using a platinum or PARP inhibitor in this patient group. There's also some data suggesting that men with cryptiform or intraductal histology might have a higher frequency of those mutations. So NCCN recommend considering germline testing if you see intraductal or cryptiform histology on a biopsy, and all men who meet family history criteria. And family history criteria is kind of a changing field, and how we define which patients should qualify for family history changes. And it depends if you look at breast and ovarian cancer guidelines or if you look at prostate cancer guidelines. In our paper, we really focused on prostate cancer guidelines for germline testing. So the most recent NCCN guidelines recommend all men who meet the following family history criteria to undergo germline testing. So men who have personal history of prostate cancer and either have a known germline mutation in the family, so someone in their family got germline testing and were tested positive for one of the mutations, so they should go undergo Caskade testing. For all men with Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry, because we know that this patient population is enhanced with some founder mutations in BRCA1 and BRCA2. If men have a personal history of breast cancer, because male breast cancer is associated with BRCA1, BRCA2 mutations, if one or more than one first, second, or third degree relatives had either breast cancer at the age before 50, had a male relative with breast cancer, had a family member with ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, or a prostate cancer, which was kind of a higher risk prostate cancer, either high risk, very high risk, localized disease, or metastatic. If there are first degree family members that have a prostate cancer that was either diagnosed at an earlier age, less than 60, or was kind of a higher risk disease. So as we know that prostate cancer can be low risk, like grade one, and that might not necessarily be clinically meaningful for patients or for the family history. But if we do have a younger diagnosis or higher risk diagnosis, this is something that we pay attention to when I think about, is there a family component that we should be looking in with germline testing? Other indications for family history criteria are more than two first degree, second degree, or third degree relatives that had breast cancer or prostate cancer at any age, or if there are three or more first or second degree relatives, which diseases that are associated with Lynch, especially if they're diagnosed at a younger age. And Lynch associated cancers include biliary tract, endometrial, stomach, ovary. So kind of the way to think about it is, well, obviously if you have a known germline mutation, Ashkenazi Jewish population, you should think about them. And if you look at the family history, the things that should ring a bell are cancer diagnosis, which are part of HBOC, hereditary breast and ovarian cancer syndrome, and cancer diagnosis, which is part of a Lynch syndrome. And the more family members involved, the younger the diagnosis, or if you have a concerning family history for prostate cancer, men diagnosed younger, men that have more aggressive disease, those are kind of all the red flags in a family history where we should think about germline testing.
Right. And so I guess taking this all together, you know, with your work and just the field in general, you know, what really remains to be unaddressed with germline testing, and specifically what future directions should really be the focus moving forward in research that might come in this field?
Thank you so much for this question. I think there is a lot to be answered and there is a lot to be discovered. We know that having a mutation, germline mutation, doesn't necessarily equal to developing a cancer. And there is more to be discovered is what influences if patients with have germline mutations do develop prostate cancer or they don't. The field is looking into what's called the polygenic risk scores, is that it looks in kind of more genetic data, not just on a particular mutation, and looks if a combination of multiple genetic information can tell us that patients are high risk of developing prostate cancer or not. I think there is more to be found as far as therapeutic implications, which mutations are the best predictors of the response, what other factors do we need to look at other than just having a germline mutation to see if patients would respond to the treatment? For example, do they need to have a mutation in their second allele in somatic to in order to respond to PARP inhibitors or platinum? And going back to what we discussed in the beginning, I think there is more to be answered about how to deliver germline testing and what are the best ways to minimize the stress to make the access the easiest for our patients.
Perfect. And so lastly, to sum things up, is there anything that I haven't asked about regarding your work or germline mutations in general that you think is really important to share here?
So there was one more thing that I wanted to bring up about germline testing, and the difference about the testing is that there's now kind of two types of testing that is offered to our patient. One is a tumor or somatic testing, and another is germline testing. And I think it's very important to remember that somatic testing is not a substitution for germline testing. One, some somatic panels just don't report any germline mutations, or they kind of bioinformatically filter them out and they would not even end up in the report. And even if they don't do that, they're just not designed to look for germline mutations. There were still a miss about 8% of germline mutations. So I think it's very important if men meet the criteria for germline testing, they should undergo dedicated germline testing, and we shouldn't rely on somatic testing only. That's kind of one of the points I wanted to highlight. And to summarize what we've talked before is that a large subset of patients need to get germline testing and include all men with metastatic prostate cancer, all men with high risk and very high risk disease, and all men that meet family history criteria. And regardless if they had somatic testing before or not, they should have a dedicated germline testing.
Perfect. Well, that's all I had for you, Dr. Sokolova. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to our podcast. Or just listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you again next time.